Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back, Taxation is Theft. Sorry for my voice. As you can see, I'm flying my flag upside down because I'm in distress. I have a cold or a flu or something because I didn't get my vaccinations. I wish the government would have forced me to do it. Hey, that was my choice. So we have an interesting show set up today. If I can make it all the way through, we have. Sorry, I'm halfway fuzzy on which buttons I'm pressing. Also, and I haven't even taken any of the good medication yet. I have with me Elizabeth Janicki. Welcome.
Here.
I forgot to turn your sound back on. Say hi again.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
One more take. All right. Awesome. So Elizabeth is, we're trying to figure out her title. She's new to the Libertarian Party, but she's kind of had a little history of libertarianism kind of throughout her life. So hopefully we'll have some interesting things to talk about. But why don't you just start off there and kind of give us your backstory? How did you become a big L?
Okay. Well, I never really understood the difference between, you know, Republican and Democrat growing up. And then around the time that my dad moved back home because he was working overseas as a contractor for the military, he just immersed me with so many different things and ideas. And he introduced me to the Glenn Beck show and The Blaze, so that was the first kind of exposure I got. And then throughout that time, I always was really attached to the ideas and then realized that there's a difference between a constitutionalist and a libertarian. And then when I met Desiree several years later, so I had some more time and wasn't really into politics at all. I met Desiree Lindsay and Tyler Lindsay and found out the wonderful world of the local government and how the libertarians play a role in that, even if we are a third party.
Awesome. So I want to get back to Glenn Beck in a minute because I know everyone's got mixed
feelings.
Oh,
my goodness. So do I.
Well, but let me ask you this first, because I think this is an important distinction. So you actually started getting interested in politics earlier, but you were more focused on like the national stuff. And, you know, it sounds like you're listening to national type people like Glenn Beck, right? So that's kind of what the media gives you, right? What did you know? What did you know about before Desiree came along and and woke you up to local government? What was kind of what did you think of local government? Was it always like, no, it's the big one that matters?
It wasn't necessarily that. Actually, my idea of government was at that time when I first had it, and still now, has to do with the individual one person. So I didn't even think about groups at that point. I was thinking about how do I govern myself and what I do in my life. So I guess that's kind of why Glenn Beck appealed to me, is because I grew up with a Christian background. And even though he has very out there ideas, and especially in his early years, he was a very, what's the word? I forgot the word. But, you know, there's a lot of sort of bad opinions and good opinions about him, and he's had many different faces throughout the years. But in his later times, when he first started The Blaze, a lot of it had to do with self, and a lot had to do with like beliefs and morals from a higher power and everything. So as that sort of was stuck in me, that's the idea that I had, was how to govern yourself, and that's how you impact the government around you, the Caesar above you. And so once I met Desiree, it actually gave me the idea of just what it means to actually impact the government around you and what it means to actually be involved. Because, you know, especially when you're young, all you're thinking about is yourself and your immediate friends and family and the things going on. It's a very selfish idea. So I kind of learned that the biggest way to govern yourself is to actually go out and do it. The best way to govern others is to be able to guide yourself. So it's like a back and forth, you know, relationship.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I have, if you, are you up for a tough question? Cause I've got a challenge for you.
Sure. I mean, I won't know anyone that's listening to this probably.
Okay. So Chris is going off in the comments. How is taxation theft? And he's pointing out the, what do we call this argument? You use it there. You use the, you receive the benefits, therefore it's not theft. So he's saying, do you take your kids to the park? Do you go to the beach, which of course the government created the beach? Do you use the street lights? You know, these sort of questions. And of course I live in a town where we actually just got our street lights in. And yes, the government did that, but 2 months ago we didn't have them and we walked around with our flashlights. No big deal. Nobody cared. So to this argument, do you want to try to explain? Well, first let me ask you, is taxation theft?
I think in the way that I believe it to be, yes. I guess it depends on what my definition of taxation being theft is to begin with. But yes, I would use the definition for sure, just for how I see taxation. Yeah, I don't know. It's a loaded question.
All right.
But so, yes, I would define it as theft.
So I'm going to put you up to the task to counter Chris's position that if you use streetlights or roads or the public park or the public beach, that it is not theft because you are receiving the benefits. What would you say to that?
Oh, man, I have so many answers to that. Because I was at one point in Chris's position and still in some small ways do think that it's not all theft. But at the same time, how I see this theft in my life is there are a lot of things that the government funds that I don't support. And a lot of things that we, or not government funds, but a lot of things that we pay taxes on that the government uses that isn't helpful for me or I disagree with morally. So a good way to avoid that is to being self-sufficient. And let's say, for example, this isn't necessarily me talking about God in this aspect, but in local churches and a lot of communities, some of the most flourishing that I've seen in my life were just done by people choosing to put forth that effort to have that building made or this event put on. So, and usually those are the most joyful. You have a more community outreach. Everyone's closer. There's a lot more communication. So I do think that the government taking money away from us without a decision stifles the creativity and prosperity of the individual communities because they don't get to put in what they want to put in necessarily, or get the greatest, I don't know, it's just so much more fulfilling for us to be able to make things, to be able to have things that we provided for ourselves. But I don't know, I'm just going to stop there and hopefully I'll be able to say some other things, but I definitely think I need to clear my mind and hear some
yeah,
of your...
Yeah, no, that's good. so, and yeah, I mean, that's kind of what it comes down to. We're, you know, we grew up in a system where we believe things are the way that they are just because that's the way they've always been. Why?
Oh my goodness. Yes. And I actually was going to talk about that. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so, but when you start pointing out, okay, well, you know, let's use Chris's example. Let's say I kidnap somebody and I keep them locked in my basement, right? They are there against their will. They are, whether you want to call them slaves, maybe I'm making them work. You know, they are prisoners, right? It's a violation of their rights to live their life the way they wanted to, mm-hmm. because I've captured them. Now, if this person's down there for a week and I bring them food, and let's say they're working for me, by force, because I say, if you don't work, I'm going to kill you. But then I bring them food and I say, here, eat this, because I need you to be alive so you can continue to work for me.
Mm-hmm.
And they eat that food. This argument that Chris puts forward is really equal to that, by saying, well, you ate the food. You accepted a benefit of the conditions of me mm-hmm. holding you in my basement and forcing mm-hmm. you to do work. So you must agree to the terms of this contract. But the reality is, he would never be in that position in the first place.
If he wasn't kidnapped in the first place, yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, for example, like, you might live in a city that doesn't have streetlights. Okay, if we all lived in that world. I mean, think about it. When were streetlights first invented? A couple hundred years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And now they run on electricity. When was that invented? And it wasn't invented by the government. The government didn't say, we need to make electricity so people don't stumble around in the dark. No, they mm-hmm. had lanterns back then, and that's how they got around. Or they would go to sleep, and they didn't have these job cycles mm-hmm. to get to. So it's really interesting, but it's that we're conditioned to live in this world. So of course, like, that's what we're used to. That's, you know, mm-hmm. the question of, you know, without taxes, how will we pay for the roads? I actually like hearing that question, because when somebody, like, if I say taxation is theft and somebody says, but what about the roads? Now mm-hmm. they're actually thinking about a question that they've never mm-hmm. asked themselves in their entire life, because that question always had an answer, and the answer is government. But now we say, okay, hypothetically, there is no government. How do we build roads?
Yeah.
Now they're starting to think. They have an answer, but at mm-hmm. least they're like, well, how would we pay for it? I don't know. Why don't you start thinking? Why don't you turn your brain on and start thinking? How would you pay for it if I told you that government was not allowed to pay for it with taxes anymore? What can you come up with?
Me right now?
If you got something.
I'm just kind of thinking about that. You know, it's like, wait, I had it. For example, at my grandma's house, we don't use taxes from our neighbors to have the long dirt road that leads from the main street to our house.
Right.
We don't have that. And we have a lot of property. So we need that, but we went and did it ourselves. And I feel like, you know, taxation on things is usually like someone else discovered it. Some other person was using it without any type of support from the community or others, but from their own hands and everything. And now we are giving taxes to people, but there are lots of places where those taxes aren't used for roads. There are plenty of places where those taxes are no longer being used for the things that actually help the people. And those, that's kind of where that dilemma comes in. So are our taxes actually paying for the roads? You know, what's the percentage of it actually being paid for the people that are living in these areas, and what's being used for things that we don't agree with, we don't need, you know?
I was just doing some research on some what I like to call propaganda, but everyone hates that word, but I say it jokingly. Different things that our government has spent money on, and one of them was, I think it was $50 million they spent to send people to Africa to teach uncircumcised men how to wash their genitals. $50 million, no less. So I wonder what kind of extravagant vacation that was. It's insane. And you know, the reality is, if, you know, everybody hates the idea of toll roads, right? But the reality is, you're already paying for them. Like, mm-hmm. you're like, if you say, yeah, but I don't want to pay to drive on the roads, you're already paying for them. It's just that you're paying 10 times more, and you're not paying it directly. You're paying it, like, mm-hmm. indirectly through gas taxes and sales taxes and traffic tickets and all this other crap, which they're not about safety. Spoiler alert. So, you know, it's they're spending it anyway, but then you have all these bureaucrats who are making just tons mm-hmm. and tons of money on it. And there's, you know, I use the analogy of a restaurant all the time. If you go into a restaurant and you order a sandwich and they serve you a shit sandwich, are you going to pay for that? Probably not. And are you going to go back to that restaurant? Probably not. But if you go into the government and you say, hey, I want, you know, such and such, and they give you a shit sandwich, Are you going to pay for it? Yes, because they have a gun pointed to your head. Are you going to come back? Yes, because they have a gun pointed. They have a monopoly, and that's the only place in town to go to eat.
Yeah.
And so, it's really I think what's really interesting is if we just alone got rid of the monopoly that government has on most of the services that they provide, then we would see businesses do it better. And we'd have that alternative that we could switch to those businesses instead of being forced to buy from one provider. So let's go back to Glenn Beck for a second, because my first introduction to him was a book that I read.
I might know the name of it.
What is it? Because I can't remember. It was a long time ago.
Oh, no, never mind. He has lots of books. Was it one of his fiction books?
I don't remember. There was another radio personality that I read at the same time that was like it was called Someone's Gotta Say It, or like, I don't know, something like that. But these were like, these were like extremely right wing, people. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say up front, I don't agree with everything that they stand for now. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in California where pretty much everything was Democrat. And so now I'm reading these books and I'm like, I left California for a reason. The government was just weighing down on me too much with taxes and everything. And so now I'm in Texas and I'm like, well, I might as well read up on the Republicans a little bit. And I started reading, the constitutionalist stuff. And I was like, okay, this is really interesting stuff. They make some really interesting points that I had never thought of before. Now, of course, I had my thinking hat on. I wasn't reading it like, that's not true. Because that's, when you get into a conversation with somebody on the opposite aisle of the political spectrum, the first thing they want to do is say, well, I know you're red and I'm blue, so whatever you say, I'm going to disagree with.
Which isn't always true.
Yeah. Right. my position now is that both sides are right and both sides are wrong. I guess, what do you think about Glenn Beck? Do you find that like he's half right about some things and crazy about other things, or where do you stand on that?
Kind of both. I feel like whenever he's crazy, he believes in his mind that he is right. But the things that I do agree with, a lot of it mostly just kind of has to do with just he's very into depending on himself and his capabilities to be able to accomplish things. But then at the same time, he has a lot of really outlandish ideas that not everyone's going to believe in. And doesn't mean that's going to help everyone, which is, but he believes so strongly about, I don't know. He's also kind of getting old, too, and he has a lot of medical problems. So some of it I just kind of equate to, not always being right. And I think he has been deteriorating recently. Like that whole thing that happened with the last election, I think that he said that he had a vision, or someone told him that this one person, I forget who it was though, was going to be president, and God said so. That didn't happen.
said there was somebody saying that about every candidate.
Exactly. Whether God said it or science said it or statistics said it,
right?
You're gonna be wrong sometimes. But for the most part, I really enjoyed his stance on schools. In education, I really liked, which is kind of funny that I say that because I got homeschooled in the seventh grade. Is it okay if I go on rabbit trails?
Yeah,
sometimes?
Go for it.
Okay, cool. I got homeschooled in the seventh grade, and I am 19 years old right now and haven't graduated yet, because for the first 4 to 5 years of me being homeschooled, no one taught me. It was all just me getting ripped out of public school, all I know. Not knowing how to teach myself and just having to do it because my mom and dad worked all the time. So it wasn't until just recently that I've actually been able to just get out of that depression and anxiety and loathing of just being lost. And I'm not unintelligent, but it's just the fact of just having to be dedicated to get your schooling done and being dedicated for me to do what I need to do. And I think I always kind of admired Glenn Beck's passion for literature and things like that. And I think a lot of it wasn't necessarily that I agreed with everything he said, but just at that point when he had the blaze at the beginning of it, it was just really inspiring how he encouraged learning and being educated on what you believe in. Even if someone doesn't agree with it, like I admire educated people, even if I disagree with what they're educated on or what they what they're using their education for, because they're going towards something, and you know, wanting to observe. You know, kind of like how you accept other, you know, people that believe strongly against something you believe in, or you know, whatever. You're still welcome to them coming in so that they can understand. You know, and so you can understand the other side, and there's, you know, and understand just the to be able to appreciate the differences, because yeah, I feel like that's all politics really are, and how it should have been, and why there's we have a Democrat, why there was any, you know, voting to begin with, is so that we can have a little bit of this side and a little bit of that side, and there creates a balance. But now it's just kind of, we have a really crooked mindset polarized, now yeah. about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's. You know, that's what I always like to point out, is kind of like how we, you know, it's like being on a balancing beam. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, when you're in the middle, you might be a little bit off balance, but as long as you don't go too far to either side, you're not going to fall. But it's like when you start saying, oh my God, like you move a little bit to the left and you're like, oh my God, we're going too far to the right. So you panic and you go all the way to the right. Now you're too far mm-hmm. to the right. And so you panic and you go even further to the left. And mm-hmm. until you're just like out of control and you fall. And yeah. that's kind of what I see in the politics now. It's like, you know, 20, 30 years ago, it, I mean, there were always, you know, extremists on both sides, but now it's kind of like, you know, whenever our presidents switch sides, like now there's a Republican in power. Like, oh my God, he has to do things twice as hard and twice as fast, not only to reverse everything that Obama did, but because we know a Democrat's mm-hmm. probably going to get in next time.
Yeah. Do as much as you can in this area. And honestly, it's how things get done, is by, you know, some person is gifted in this area and some person isn't. You know, maybe one person is a horrible singer and musician, but they're a really amazing artist. So they make the album cover for the musician, and they both make profit off of it because they're doing things for each other. And one person has that talent, one person doesn't. And people that are good editors and good, you know, like maybe someone's really good with an idea with the game that they're making over here. You know, some of them are really critical.
Which game
thinkers.
Is that?
It is the Blue Line, or right? Finn Blue Line. And hopefully I'm going to get
to play. Link in the description.
Link in the description. It is the Thin Blue Line. It's going to go viral. I haven't played it yet, but I'm itching to once we get off the podcast. This is the fancy new box, and it's matte with shiny lettering and everything. And it's just so amazing. I can't believe that I have friends that are just so creative and determined to do something just so neat, you know? Like, yeah, it's a big thing. Excited for them.
Awesome. and that's another interesting thing that I like to talk about a lot is, you know, let me ask what your view is on that, since you were homeschooled. But when, like, I know I went to public school for 12 god awful years, and it was very, like, you know, they kept telling me, you know, graduate, go to college. Like, mm-hmm. if you graduate high school, if you drop out of high school, you're going to make this much. If you graduate, you're going to make this much. If you go to college, you're going to make this much. And it was just, and that was it. And there's no, like, what's an entrepreneur? Like, what is that? I don't know. How do you start it? How do you become a boss? Like, that concept was not even introduced to me until, like, I was just, like, thrown into the rest of the world. Like, hey, all these jobs suck. I don't want to work at Subway. I want to do something.
I worked at Subway.
No
and
offense.
I was so good at it. I treated that thing. Am I allowed to curse on this?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
The more the better.
I treat that bitch like a 5-star restaurant. Like it. And I cried when I left. I had a horrible boss. I worked by myself most of the time. But, like, I put so much into that job because for a long time I wanted to, you know, be different, you know, be, like, all different and stuff. And I wanted to work for, you know, like, a landscaping company and be, like, a girl that, you know, mows lawns and stuff, or work at a bookstore or whatever. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to work at Subway because I can be cool and weird and different and make a difference anywhere I work. I'm not above serving sandwiches. And it was a really rewarding experience.
Awesome. And so – let me ask you this, because that's a different That's a different work ethic than I hear from a lot of people. Do you think that you learned a lot as far as like how the business was run itself, not just how to serve the sandwiches, but how mm-hmm. how to actually run a business and move up or start your own, that kind of thing?
I don't think I learned that in this job quite. I mostly learned how to run things when, before I kind of went, not off the rails, but became more independent. I did go to church all the time, and I became a youth leader. And so I was actually in charge of a small group of girls. Then we would all have our own classes and stuff. And I led a class of girls that was actually older than me. So I was responsible for studying the material and teaching it back to them and keeping track with them, knowing if they're coming that week or not, and having a relationship with them. And it was similar to kind of being a boss, I guess. But mostly what I learned at Subway was just managing stress. Oh no, never mind. I did learn about kind of running a business. Yeah, because I had to train girls all the time. I had to train them all the time, and they were like my little girls. Like, I'm a Libra, so I'm very relational. And I was. Oh, I'm sorry. Accidentally, my phone's being dumb. Oh, okay, I'm back. Yeah, I had to, I guess, handle what's healthy and what's not healthy with those that you work with. And handling, you know, being able to separate work from home and stuff like that, because I would get really stressed out on days where I was working all by myself and there's like 10, 20 people in line, and then getting out of there at like 12 o'clock at night, and being able to go home and still be a productive person for my family and, be able to be there for my grandma and everything. And, that's kind of why I quit, is because I learned the lessons I needed to learn there. And then I realized, but school is the most important thing in my life right now. And I want to accomplish that. So it was like a fun break for a while. And then I needed to get back to that.
So,
sorry, you're kind of like off camera. I don't know if that's because my phone accidentally went out.
Oh, I don't know. The stream's working, so.
Okay.
We're good.
All right, cool.
So, So that's interesting, because I know for a lot of young people, like, I mean, I worked at a TGI Fridays for a couple years and I absolutely hated it, but what I think is really most important about these jobs is that you don't look at them as, you know, you're going to be there for the rest of your life. If you use them as a learning experience, which it sounds like you did, you can actually take something positive out of it, and then you can go and take that experience and use it somewhere else. So, you know, like you said, you trained people, you learned how the business works, how to run it a little bit. And, you know, I don't know how to compare that to most other people that are in that position, but I think those are all really valuable skills, because ultimately, you know, when let's say you continue your education, you go work for a bigger company, you want to do something more important, more productive, for society. All of those skills are going to come in handy. You're going to learn how to work with people. You're going to learn how to do things and be happy doing things that you might not enjoy doing because you know they need to get mm-hmm. done. So I think those are all really valuable lessons that you're not going to learn in school. And I think that alone is a huge shame.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of people who teach that kind of stuff, and they're usually like cast into this corner of self-help, what do you call them? Nutcases. to a lot of people, you know, like, and I'm not going to say some of them aren't, but to a lot of people, that entire industry is like, I don't need that. I already know everything. I went to school. I graduated, you know, and it's really like, yeah, but the things that they taught you in school were to get you to be another cog in the machine. They weren't to get you to think outside of the box. Mm-hmm. And you know, they didn't teach you how to have a happy life. That's what your parents hopefully would have taught you. But
yeah, it's just like, let's push you. Let's just keep pushing you through, you know. Well, now that we're kind of on the topic of schools, when I was in school, you know, they had different programs like gifted and talented and stuff where you did get, you know, kind of learn things on your own and have group projects and leadership activities and stuff. It just kind of depends on probably the but the thing is, it's like you only got to do that if you were a smart kid, if you were different. Right. But every single, like, what I didn't like about it is that every single kid in that school is different.
Right.
And it kind of gives you it. At least in my school, it was like you had to take this special test to see if your mind worked differently than all the other kids and stuff, and if you passed it or whatever. But like this, you know, like that's just answering, you know, test questions. But are we actually seeing these kids, you know, in working environments? There might have been some, you know, that would have loved to find out that they were really into horticulture or building and things like that. But because they didn't pass this test, they didn't get all the same opportunities to be in these special classes where they got to leave and learn these things. So it kind of gives this inferiority to a lot of kids that are in those positions.
Right.
That where they didn't get to go do those things. And it's the majority of the school. And I always felt really bad for, you know, leaving and realizing that all those kids are going to have to do the same thing every single day. And I'm the one that gets a break and gets to be creative when they should always have that opportunity.
And you also have to, like, consider that, you know, those programs even then are – they're limited in space because of the resources they have. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, absolutely. Like, I saw someone give an interesting talk with, you know, backed by statistics and everything, showing that, you know, basically kids coming from poor communities would do worse on the aptitude test, the standardized aptitude test, which, you know, everybody in the country is supposed to take the exact same test because it's standardized. But it's not that they didn't know the answer to the questions. It's that they didn't understand the questions because the way that they spoke was slightly different, like the Ebonics or, you know, whatever they call it. Mm-hmm. So if you can't understand the question, you know, like the problem of double negatives, right? Like I know when I was in school, like everyone, the teachers used to treat the kids who used double negatives like they were stupid. And it's like, no, that's just a habit. That's what they learned from their parents.
Yeah.
Like, you can, if you shut up and listen, you can understand what they're saying, but don't be an ass, but also teach them to understand and be patient with them, because otherwise you end up with like, okay, they're not going to understand a question because there's a, you know, there's a single negative and they're, that might confuse them. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's that type of thing. And it's insane. We're not all the same. We shouldn't all be judged the same. And to that point, it's like, okay, but it's the factory. Like that's why the Federal Department of Education was created to turn us into factory workers. So of course they want to know how good we're going to be in the factory. And that system, even though it's not really relevant anymore, it's still there because no one ever wanted to come along and disassemble it. Because if you want to disassemble it, oh, you hate schools. You want everyone to be stupid. And it's like, no, that's not what it's about at all. Anyway. Desiree's asking me to ask you about being woke. I'm not sure exactly what she means by that, but I think she's got some, you've got some secret information that you know about.
Okay. That's like how she likes to call it and everything. I'm sure as you can notice, I don't talk a lot like most teenagers and everything. And you know, that's just cause I had older sisters and whatnot, but she's basically asking about like the younger generation and how I think in the Libertarian Party, we're a lot more open to understanding that youth doesn't mean ignorance. And ignorance doesn't mean youth, but there are still some ideas that are just kind of ingrained in us that this younger person doesn't understand politics, or this person doesn't understand, you know, they're lacking maturity in some area. And although I do know a lot of very immature young people, and I have a lot of very immature aspects, we still have a lot to offer. And, you know, we're told that all the time. We're told that in conferences and in school, that the youth is the future. But I think that the reason why a lot of older people think that, you know, they say the youth is the future, but they want to make the future for the youth. They want to make their minds, you know, basically carry on what they've been doing, you know. So like you said, we're just cogs in the machine. You had actually brought up earlier, how we grow up knowing this is this way, that this is standard, that this is normal. And so when there's a change that comes, we see it as this is wrong, this is bad, this isn't what we're used to, you know, and it's like a cultural thing. I was going to talk about that today if it was brought up or had an opportunity, because I, for school right now, had to read the second chapter, an excerpt from The Scarlet Letter. And I don't know if you know about it. Maybe some of the listeners do.
I intentionally did not read that book, and I did the I pulled a Trump. I said, someone else read that book and tell me what it's about. What do I feel in these slots?
No.
I was not interested in literature.
That's my thing. Well, I mean, even though I'm not like the most smart on literature, the most intelligent on, like, I do love it when I get my hands on it. And so this second chapter, the writer, I had to write an essay on how the writer viewed the Puritans in this culture. And basically, from what I gathered from it, I wrote an essay about how he obviously described them as very bitter, very angry, very judgmental. But he described it as that they were basically sheep being led by a generation above them that was led by a generation above them that was led by a generation above them of being hateful. And it basically described how, you know, a murderer, you know, was not any more below someone who was an adulterer. And that's what the Scarlet Letter is about, is this woman who has a baby and she won't tell anyone who the father is, an unmarried woman. And she basically has to be, you know, shamed. And she's going through this, the whole story is about her going through that and her being shamed and, I guess, abused. I only read the second chapter of it. But, you know, just tormented because she didn't want to share this private thing in her life, and how they would do the same thing to her as they would do to, like, a child molester or a murderer. And their morals made sense in that way. And that's kind of what I want to talk about, is, like, that's where we are right now. Even though, you know, many of us have this anarchist view of just working from the land and living for ourselves and having communities, but nothing, you know, no one, like, above us, you know, just sticking to the man idea, we still need to understand that takes a very long time. Think about how long it's taken for our country to realize that, you know, race doesn't mean this or that, you know, like, to overcome racism, to overcome to have gender equality. It takes a lot of time, because every single person, like, obviously we don't have the Puritan culture necessarily widespread like it was before. It's, you know, I'm sure there's small sects of people everywhere, but there are always going to be people and pockets and groups that have to catch up. And it takes a lot of patience and dedication, because, yes, we could burn it all down, but the people who are still surviving are still going to have, you know, different mindsets. Just because it's all eliminated doesn't mean that everyone that grew up in that generation doesn't still remember what they experienced and what they lived with and the morals that they were given. It just means that they have to start over again. So it's a slow process of kind of weeding out what's toxic in our country. It's weeding out argumentative ideas and conversations, and just coming to, okay, this is what you know, this is what I know. Let's bring all of this to the table and make something different, make something better. And it takes every single person being on the same page to have that. I'm pretty sure every single person with whatever political leaning they have, they want everyone to believe that political leaning, right? Most people do. But you can't really do that with so many people. You know, it's very, very unlikely that every single person is going to want that, because think about how long
we can't even do that within the Libertarian Party.
Exactly. We are so far away from that, and it's going to take a very long time, because think about how long the human population has been around. That's where it comes to governing yourself. and why I always go down to that, because I have friends that believe in things that I don't believe in and agree with things I don't agree with, but I'm still friends with them. If everyone was able to do that, then we would live in a very peaceful society. But even then, some people can't even agree to do that. They'll start shouting or raising their voice or blocking people or shunning people. And they think that's, you know, love or whatnot. I understand.
I mean, that's a big one I see, you know, on social media all the time is I'm going to block this person because I don't agree with what they say, you know, after they got into like some heated argument over, you know, basically nothing. And it's really, you know, it's, you see that and you think like, okay, but you know, the person doing the blocking is really, you know, they're walking around like, oh, I blocked this person because I'm so much better than them. But the reality is the person who got blocked, and I don't want to say they're the person who got blocked. I mean, they might both be idiots, but the person who blocks the other person is literally saying, I am unable to communicate my ideas to you in a way that you can understand.
And it's your fault.
Yeah, or you're just completely unwilling to accept a different truth, which might also be. Mm-hmm. But I'm unwilling to accept you as you are. I need you out of my sight because it frustrates me to know that people like you exist, and that alone is kind of a hateful act.
Yes.
So, it's really interesting to see that. But I want to know, you know, because we see a lot of the younger generation are into this thing called socialism. Why didn't you go that way?
Okay, is it obvious that I don't do that?
Well, I mean, based on the other things you've been saying before, it's
it's like kind of obvious.
I'm in the right place.
I guess, you know, a lot of it, you know, is just sort of my upbringing, because I still have that with me, too. It's not like I'm completely removed from what I've learned from my, you know, childhood and everything. And how I kind of see it is what I was always explained to socialism, and from my own independent research, not that I know everything about it, is that I feel like socialism is taking the power away from the individual. And that's something I believe a lot in. It's, you know, socialism is, if you guys all agree to live in my basement and I'll feed you, you know, and then it just kind of takes away the individual growth. I feel like it just kind of gives power away to the individual in my eyes, and gives it all to the government. And yes, everyone's taken care of, but, you know, like sheep get to be led to different pastures, you know, like sheep get to, you know, like go and eat and everything, but they're still under the same person and they're dependent on whether or not the herder takes them to a green pasture or a dry pasture. They're dependent on where that herder leads them. And
So one sheep is like, if they're being led to a dry pasture, one sheep is never going to wander off and say, hey guys, why don't we try this way this time? And maybe.
Yeah, exactly. And if they do, the herder's going to go get them and lead them back. And that's like
you're
very
crazy.
Mild.
You're crazy. Go off on your own.
Yeah, it's very mild. It's a very mild example. But yeah, this is kind of how I see it. And, you know, some of it's just the young person in me, you know, doesn't want to be told that.
What do you think fear has to do with this? Do you think that fear plays any part in whether you decide to lean towards socialism or personal individual freedom?
Yeah. Well, I kind of see it as we worship the things that we fear. So, you know, this is just because, I grew up in the church, so I use a lot of Bible examples. But it's kind of like whenever Moses, was it Moses? Yeah, went up to the mountain to get the Ten Commandments. And the Israelites had learned so much about what God had done for them and everything. But immediately whenever he went up there, they lost faith and started to fear that they were going to starve. So they started worshiping Baal, which is, you know, the big golden calf.
Right.
And, you know, Moses comes down and he's like, I just showed you guys that, you know, you've seen all these amazing things of what you can do, you know, and now you're worshiping a goddamn cow. Like, or whatever, you know, and in their eyes, you know, they just saw that as the issue. So they started to worship what they feared, which was starvation. And yeah, absolutely. Fear has a huge thing to do with it. I feel like people depend on the government because they don't know how to depend on themselves. They think that, people love their technology. People love their, love YouTube. They love instant gratification. They love food and they love security. And if a government or a leader or a parent can give them just enough satisfaction with that, they can do whatever they want, underneath the surface. And if everyone's distracted enough and given enough of their basic needs, then, and that's the thing too, is not all socialist countries are given, you know, their, or communist countries aren't given their basic needs a lot of the time too. So it's like, we want that. Yeah. It's just the idea. They love the idea. And if they're given enough, you know, if your ass is kissed enough, or, you know, you're given just this or that, you know, like, if you're given enough handouts, you think that, you know, everything's going to go the right way. Yeah. Sorry. I am a little nervous, so I'm sort of not explaining myself as well as I would like.
A lot of that makes sense. you know, the world is a scary place. And, you know, especially when we're kids, we're protected by our parents. You know, everyone has a different experience. You know, some people are raised in homes where they don't feel protected at all. They run away. They're moved from house to house, different parents adopted. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so many different circumstances that can break that. But you know, for a lot of people, it's, you know, or even if you have your parents, you know, from the time you're born to the time you're 25 or 45 and still living in their basement, everyone's got a different experience of what that protection is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even in the caveman days, even in like, pack animals like wolves, you'll see the same thing. Like, somebody comes along and they become the alpha. Mm-hmm. And these other people who are, they're afraid of what it would be like to lead the pack or to stand out. It's a fear. And so they figure, well, hey, this guy's big and scary. I know if we come across, you know, a threat to our pack, if as long as I stay behind him, he'll protect me because he's
yeah.
He's
it's like make friends with the biggest guy in prison.
Exactly, and so, you know, that's kind of the mentality. And when you have government is the biggest guy in the prison. That's a terrible analogy because every day every country becomes, you know, closer and closer to being a prison. But yeah, it's like that when, you know, and I have this conversation with people about taxes, like, you know, when I talk to them about the tax system and I explain to them, you know, in most cases, you really don't have to pay taxes. It's just smoke and mirrors. You don't need a driver's license. You don't need to register your cars, all these things that I've proven time and time again, mm-hmm. that like, hey, I don't do it, and they stop me, they question me, and I don't get away with it. I'm able to do it because the law doesn't say they can, but they're afraid of the government because the government is bigger and scarier than me, and so if they mm-hmm. try to do this on their own, they get in trouble with the government. They look at me, and they're like, okay, you're just one little weirdo. You're not going to come to my defense and rescue me against this big, scary government. Mm-hmm. And this, you know, it's the same thing about the economy. When we talk about the economy, if a libertarian is explaining to somebody, hey, the Federal Reserve, the central banks, the CIA, the, you know, all this other stuff is destroying your life. They're making it more difficult and more scary for you to live in. They look at us and they're like, well, I mean, when the tax man comes knocking on my door, what are you going to do? Defend me?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And so they see that fear and they're like, well, I can't take that risk that this guy is right. I'm still going to side with the biggest guy in the prison.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the safe way that I know how to live. And that's socialism. When the biggest guy is telling you, hey, this socialism is going to work. We're going to give you health care. We're going to give you this. We're going to give you that versus, you know, some little schmuck like me who's like, dude, you can make so much money with a regular job if government were not involved that you wouldn't need health insurance. You wouldn't need government to give you food.
And a lot of it,
that's a risk.
Then you're basically – that's the thing too, is like people are afraid to depend on themselves. And
what if I don't make it?
Yeah, what if I don't make it? What if I go through hard times? What if I can't buy these new clothes? What if I can't feed my family? You know, things like that. If I, you know, get a job and something happens or I get fired. It's just, it's so unpredictable. Life is so unpredictable, but that's
why government's been telling us, if you follow this formula, you'll, like, everything is going to turn out perfect for you.
Yeah,
you're
going to
have a good job. You're going to retire at 65. You're going to have money in the bank. Everything's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, actually, I've sort of been experiencing that the more and more I get older. I'm currently dating someone. It's, I think, only, like, my second, like, actual, like, long-term or, like, serious relationship. And we've been together for a few months. And he and I both don't really have, like, 9-to-5 jobs. He basically is just hired for odd and end jobs. He's in a band and they work sometimes several nights a week, sometimes, you know, a couple times a month. And that's where most of his money's coming in. But he also does, like, you know, handyman jobs and things like that. And he wants to get a fuller, steadier job right now. But even then, even if you don't have a steady job, there's tons of things you can do to support yourself and tons of things you can do. You know, that's where entrepreneur comes in. And it's only how much you trust your own capabilities.
Absolutely.
If you want to have a certain job, then go to college. If you don't know what you want to do yet, do things while you're figuring that out. It's just, don't stay idle. Don't accept that what you're doing right now is forever. Don't accept that just because you got fired from this job or didn't get that job means that you can't get hired somewhere else. Doesn't mean that everything's hopeless. I mean, look at Desiree and Tyler. They've been going through, I don't know if they're okay with me talking about that. I'm sure they are, you know, because they're, you know, they've gone through times where they haven't always had as much money as other times. And Desiree has taught me that, you know, that doesn't mean they gave up. And now they're having this amazing, you know, opportunity to spread this game. And it possibly...
Link in the description.
Link in the description. And now they're having fun doing it. Sometimes work isn't fun, but you have to have the right mindset of being just that productivity, getting up in the day, you know, cleaning your house, just doing things for yourself. If you were really that concerned about, you know, if the government didn't, you know, take care of you, or you're really that concerned about having to take care of yourself, you know, like, realize that if you don't have money for food, you can grow vegetables cheaper. Maybe you can't do that. Well, you know, there's always something you can do, and the government makes you think that there's nothing you can do apart from them. And I think that's scarier.
Yeah, honestly. I think, you know, to me, it's having dealt with the government so many times and being tossed around like I'm just a ball in the lottery machine. You know, like, you know, you go to pretty much any government. Like, we all know who Donald Trump is. Does Donald Trump know who you are?
Is that again?
Oh, I thought you were going to say, but do we really know who he is? Do we really know who anyone is? But you know, we know who, you know, we might know who the vice president, the secretary of different departments. We might know the name of the person at the Social Security office that we're talking to one day.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't know our names. If we're lucky, they know our number. And we're probably going to, like, you know, I've been to places where, you know, they ask you what was your name again? What was your social security number again? They don't care about you. They don't know who you are. And especially,
have you been here before?
Yeah. They really don't care. They don't know you. They don't care about you. They don't want to know. Versus, like, you know, not to plug corporations, because of course corporations can be evil too, but for the most part, when they know they have to fight for your business, they force their employees to be nice to you. They might be reading from a script. They might not know you personally, but at least they make it their job. Hey, remember the person's name, address them as in this script, automatically fill in their name. So at least they feel like, you know, you're an actual person. At least they're trying. But when it comes to government, it's like, I'm sorry, what are you here for again? Hold on a second. I need to go to the vending machine. Like, it's, you know, they treat you like total crap. And these are the people who, you know, but then they get the figurehead on TV saying, oh, just trust the system. Don't worry. We're going to take care of everything. Everything's going to be great. We're going to hire the best people. Everything's going to be awesome. It doesn't work that way. And it sucks. Like what I see is, the most painful thing. My dad used to always tell me, I'm learning things the hard way, because he would tell me like, you can't do that because something's going to happen, right? Like, don't stick that knife in the electrical outlet.
I've done that.
Yeah. So of course I do it anyway. Oh, you learn the hard way. And
oh, the power's out in my room now.
But what's interesting is like, is I meet so many people who are the exact same way about government. Like, you know, whether they're like, yeah, I'm going to go help, I'm going to go serve my country and join the military and all that. Well, okay, but you're not going to do that. You're going to be protecting an oil field. You're going to be helping some corporation get rich. You might get blown up. You might lose an arm. Protecting some oil, you're not spreading mm-hmm. democracy like they say you are. You're just overturning mm-hmm. governments that they don't like. And then they get injured, they lose an arm, or if they come back alive at mm-hmm. all, they come back and they're like, well, shit, you were right. I guess I learned the hard way. That's what it is. And, you know, it's, I guess it's, you know, going back to the biggest guy in the prison thing, it's like, well, hey, if the biggest guy in the prison says he's going to take care of me, I guess I have to take his word for it.
Yeah, right.
And even...
I'll be your girlfriend.
Yeah, right? And one day he beats the crap out of you, and it's like... and a lot of people turn into like, oh, well, he didn't mean it. He was just in a bad mood. He had too much to drink that night.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, they're in prison. He had too much toilet whiskey.
Yeah. Yeah, it's insane, but it's, you know, a lot of people, especially in our movement, I don't know where you stand on this, but a lot of people will spread that same kind of hatred towards, you know, the military, the police, but mm-hmm. realistically, it's you really shouldn't do that, because in reality, yes, mm-hmm. they're working for the government and they're making things more difficult for us, but at the end of the day, they're victims of the same scam. They're being told all the same lies we are, except they're just in mm-hmm. deeper. They're giving up even more because they just believe, you know, what do we call this guy? Do we call him Bodog? What's the big prison name? Well, anyway, that guy.
Shit. Ben.
All right, Ben. I'm going to have to see if anybody comments. Hey, I'm Ben.
I was hoping.
So that's really interesting. Anyway, we're coming up on time for tonight, but is there anything else you wanna any messages you wanna give to anyone, anything liberty related? Tell someone how taxation is theft. I don't know.
I guess what I could just kind of talk about is it doesn't matter how book smart you are, or how many classes you've taken, how many words you know and definitions you know and all of that. It doesn't matter how good you are at math or statistics. If you have a passion towards something, or something, you know, if you're passionate about something, about a cause, about something in your life, that's your area of expertise. And that's where you can be a part of something. Just because you're not talking on a platform and you're not maybe writing books or even on a podcast doesn't mean that you can't speak life and liberty into people, and you can't teach people to be dependent on themselves and to be, you know, a strong and independent woman. You know, it doesn't mean that you can't inspire people. And I think that the most important government there is yourself, your family, and what is directly around you. And if you're able to do something in your life that positively impacts another person or group of people or plan that you have, then just keep doing it. Especially, you know, like that's, I don't know, I'm starting to get a little off. I don't know, just kind of tangy. It's also important, you know, just not necessarily believe in yourself, but stretch yourself. I think that's the biggest thing is it's up to the individual. And if all the individuals begin to do the, you know,
Nice. We get what you're trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Awesome. That's a great message. Okay, well, it's been great having you on, and we'll see you around sometime. And
thank you.
And taxation is theft.
Taxation is theft.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You've